This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Did you know sugar can be addictive? Me neither. Author and nutritional expert Dan DeFiggio is going to join me to explain the signs of sugar addiction and what you can do about it. Thanks for joining me, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote a book, Beating Sugar Addiction for Dummies. What prompted you to do that?
The concept of helping people with stress eating and sugar addiction really grew out of more of a necessity than my own intention. When I started in the exercise and nutrition field in 1993, it started to become clear right away that the idea of people reaching for sugar for convenience or energy or comfort was a real problem. And stress eating and emotional eating is a really big issue with people. And so over the years, I sort of developed a system to help people do better in that regard.
How difficult is it to take sugar out of your diet? I mean, in the stores, they have all this sugar-free stuff. It should be kind of easy.
Well, sort of. You know, anytime we're talking about stress eating and emotional eating, it's really more about the psychology than actually the nutrition science. So sure, I mean, it's pretty easy to remove sugar from your diet. If that's all it took, then it would be a piece of cake. But people eat for reasons other than what they know. So one of the things that I do on a regular basis is I work with people on emotional eating and stress eating, and I sort of teach them how to make these baby steps towards healthier eating so that, you know, 6 months from now, you're totally different. You eat different, you weigh less, you're much healthier, but it doesn't really feel like you're doing anything radically different because we go through these gradual improvements over time.
Is there a different way if you're like an emotional eater versus a stress eater? Like, would you eat different stuff, or is it just you're overeating in general?
Well, it's kind of the same thing, regardless. And to be honest with you, if we're going to expand this into the general psychology of medicating, you can look at the behavior of people who are using some sort of a substance as a substitute for something else. And whether it's sugar or food in general or alcohol or gambling or, you know, whatever your thing is, we as humans tend to use these other substances or other activities as either a distraction or a replacement for something that we are really seeking. And that's really what I try to get to in the crux of my work with folks is, what is it that you really want? Because when people are stress eating, you know, what they really want is not junk food. What they really want might be comfort or a feeling of control, or maybe it's attention from his or her partner, or, you know, respect from the boss. There are a lot of things that people are actually seeking, but what we tend to do is we skip that part, and we have learned to just, like, grab something that's handy or that's tasty in order to distract ourselves from these uncomfortable feelings that we don't really want to feel.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I know as a kid, I always loved chocolate, and that was my go-to thing to feel good.
Yeah, I understand. And when you look at it on the surface, it's like we as adults can make sensible decisions about, okay, well, I really like chocolate, so we can work, we can figure out a way to work some healthy chocolate into your weekly food plan. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's where I try to get people to that point, you know, when they're making intentional decisions around food as opposed to reactive decisions around food.
I've tried to take sugar out of my diet for a long time, and I've noticed that when things have lower sugar, it's usually also like they'll have higher sodium in it. So what can you do about that? Should you just take away, like, hey, I shouldn't just buy pre-made stuff or processed stuff? Like, I should start making it myself?
Well, I think you'll find as a general rule that natural foods are going to be lower in sugar and higher in nutrients than a lot of your packaged and processed stuff. So you're absolutely right, Mason. When the manufacturers start to take away sugar, they have to put other things into the mix in order to replace the taste. So they'll load it up with chemical sweeteners, or they'll load it up with sodium or fat or lots of other things in order to try to make it, you know, sort of an enticing food product. So I really try to steer people toward, so if most of your carbohydrates are coming from vegetables and fruits and real grains like quinoa and brown rice and whole grains like that, you're going to be a lot better off, because you're going to have less sugar, you're going to have more nutrients, more fiber, and you're going to feel a lot better overall.
What about sugar substitutes? I mean, couldn't you just load up on those and it'll be okay?
Some of the sugar substitutes are healthier choices than sugar. My go-to for that is stevia powder. People can use that instead of sugar as a sweetener. But on a large scale, what I really try to aim people towards doing is starting to reduce your imagined requirement for these over-sweetened foods, because our palates and our brains start to become desensitized to the very sweet tastes. So over time, you need more and more sweet to get that same pleasurable feeling. So I try to get people to gradually step back away from using sweeteners of any type, so that you start to resensitize your palate towards what real food tastes like.
When it comes to anything filled with sugar, usually it's like, oh, it's a power snack type of thing. But it usually doesn't fill you as much as it should. What about protein? I know that you should be putting protein in everything you eat, but what's like a rule of thumb? Should it be the amount should be the size of your palm, or should it be like per gram? Like, I always get confused about that.
Well, I think the main thing is, a good rule of thumb for most people is, try to make sure that you get a protein source every time that you eat. Because you're absolutely right, when you eat an all-carbohydrate snack, especially a high-sugar snack, it'll give you an immediate rush of calories and glucose. But then you get the dreaded energy crash an hour or two later when your blood sugar levels start to tank again. So one of the things that protein does is it helps to level out your blood sugar response, so you don't get the big spikes and the big drops. So every 3 or 4 hours, when you eat, you'll ideally have a combination of some kind of protein and some sort of plant.
One of the things I liked about what you put in your book is the substitutes for if you have like a craving for chocolate, you can actually go for, what is it, the 70% cocoa chocolate?
Right. The dark chocolate that's 70% cacao is a lot healthier. It's actually got a lot of polyphenols and things that are good for you. So if you are careful and sensible with your portions, it's actually a healthier snack than the milk chocolate.
What if you want, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something like soury. What would you replace like a sweet tarts with? Because I know sometimes I have like a taste for something really like sour sweet.
Sour sweet. I'd probably suggest citrus for starters, like a lemon or a lime.
Oh, that's good.
So maybe some mineral water with lemon or lime in it. Or if you really want the sour, just chop up a lemon and suck the juice right out of the lemon. That'll pucker your lips right away.
I bet it would. When it comes to someone trying to replace sugar from their diet, are there any pitfalls that they should try to avoid, like maybe common mistakes people make?
That is an excellent question. I think, once again, when you really start shifting your nutrition towards whole foods, you're going to stay out of a lot of trouble. I think what happens is people start to try to find a lot of substitutes, and they start leaning towards these processed, chemical-laden foods, and it's just not good for you. You know, the fewer chemicals that you eat, the better.
What about for those who have tried and kind of failed? I mean, what is it okay to, like, put a little bit of sugar in your diet? I know, like, especially if this is your first time trying to do it.
Yeah, absolutely it is. In fact, when I work with people, one of the things that you'll find is that I don't try to get people to completely eliminate sugar from their diet, because I don't think that's A, necessary, and B, it's not really a good approach to try to get people to completely eliminate anything, out of their diet within reason. If you go to the beatingsugaraddiction.com website, this is the main website I have set up for the sugar addiction work. And one of the things that you'll see is my main approach is trying to stay away from the all or nothing thinking. Because if we have a minute, I would like to go through sort of the typical cycle of noble attempt into failure and shame that people tend to repeat over and over. If someone is saying, boy, my nutrition is really a train wreck right now, and I'm gaining weight and I feel terrible and I'm gonna quit sugar, or I'm gonna eat only organic pasture clippings and salmon from now on, starting Monday, and I'm going to do everything just right. I'm going to exercise every day. I'm going to get plenty of rest, and I'm not going to be stressed out, and everything's going to change on day one of this new detox plan. Well, you know, these are noble goals, but as we all know, those kinds of all-or-nothing plans are not sustainable because there's too many changes at once. So if you're trying this detox plan where you throw everything with sugar out, you know, if you've been a stress eater most of your life on and off, and then you try to go from that to doing everything perfectly, you're going to crash and burn quickly. And then you go back to doing what you used to do. So the end result is you haven't really changed anything. So different than that, my approach is baby steps towards gradual improvements, gradual sugar reduction, gradual healthier eating, getting better at planning healthier foods so you're not at the mercy of whatever garbage you can grab quickly. And then, you know, a few months down the road, your behavior is totally different. Your psychology is totally different. You're losing weight. You're having more energy. You're eating way healthier. But you've been able to maintain that because it's not this all or nothing attempt to go from doing nothing to trying to be perfect.
Yeah, a lot of people I can see would get discouraged, especially when it's like you try so hard and it's almost like, oh, you know, I messed up one time and I'm not going to try anymore.
Well, exactly. So if you are making an attempt to eat less sugar and then you have some cookies, the all-or-nothing thinking will say, well, I've already had a cookie, so I might as well eat all these cookies and anything else I want for the rest of the week, and I'll just start again on Monday. And that is not a sensible plan because that just repeats the cycle of restriction and deprivation and failure and shame and frustration, and you just keep doing that over and over and over. So you got to stop that.
For myself personally, I can do the breakfast, lunch, and dinner really healthy, you know, but when it comes to the snack portion, I always falter. It will always be something really bad, like a bag of Doritos, or it's just going to be a couple candy bars. When it comes to snacks, how do you know when you're good on a snack?
Snacks can be difficult for folks because in their mind, a lot of times, a snack is sort of different than a meal.
Right.
And it might be in amount, but ideally in content, it's going to be approximately the same. So as I had mentioned before, ideally, every time you eat, you're going to have a protein source and a plant. So sometimes you can combine the two, such as if you have a handful of almonds or walnuts. You know, that is a plant, but it's a higher protein and higher fat source, low in sugar. So that's a really good snack right there. That'll help to keep your blood sugar more level.
I didn't realize if your blood sugar kind of spikes, you're going to get hungry. So at what point can you kind of tell in your own body that, hey, you should have a snack, or hey, it's getting late, maybe you should just eat that meal instead?
That is a really good point. My general advice, and of course it varies a little bit from person to person, but my general advice is try to eat something every 3 or 4 hours, because that's a pretty good way to keep your blood sugar levels more stable. If you go more than that, once you start getting into 5, 6, 7 hours with no food, then your brain starts turning on that craving center because it thinks that you're starving and there's no food around. It's going to trigger fat storage. It's going to trigger your appetite. So you tend to overeat if you've gone too long without eating. So trying to eat more often is a much better way to keep your blood sugar levels and your hunger and cravings at bay.
How important is it to drink water? I mean, you're supposed to have your 8 cups of water a day type of thing. But if you go without, like sometimes I only have a couple of bottles of water a day, and most of it is probably in coffee form.
Water is really important because the hypothalamus, and I don't want to get too technical with stuff, but basically the section of your brain that controls hunger is the same as that controls thirst. So when you have a thirsty sensation in your brain, a lot of times you might interpret that as hunger or a craving of some type. So one of the things that I like to suggest that folks do is when you start to get an urge for something sweet, the first thing you should do is drink a big glass of water. In fact, I have on the beatingsugaraddiction.com website, I have a little giveaway book, like a free guidebook. It's 3 steps to kill your sugar cravings. And that's the first step right there, is to drink a big glass of water.
Also, real fast, you have your book, The Beating Sugar Addiction. You have a bunch of recipes in here, and I thought they were really cool. For the morning ones, you made a protein muffin. You have multigrain pancakes. I always thought that having too much carb in your diet was bad.
Well, yes, having too much of anything in your diet is not great for you.
That's true, too. Everything in moderation, right? But when it comes to carbs, I think it's that misconception because of the celebrity diets. You have like the Atkins diet and all this stuff where it's
right.
Like, oh, carbs are bad. So I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. Are there good carbs versus bad carbs?
In general, yes. I mean, your best carbohydrates are the vegetables and fruits and whole grains, as we discussed earlier, because those are the carbohydrates that are higher in fiber and much higher in nutrients. And those are chemical-free. The carbohydrates that you want to stay away from are clearly your junk food carbohydrates, like sugar, sugared soda, a lot of the snack foods that are nothing but processed wheat or processed potatoes. You know, anything that's not a real food is probably a less desirable kind of carbohydrate.
Speaking of potatoes, starch, should you like be more careful about starch? Because I think starch can turn into glucose, right?
Well, all carbohydrates turn into glucose.
Oh, okay.
The question is how fast and how much. So the starches tend to have more carbohydrate per gram contained in them just because they're a denser food. So, yes, you are correct that when you look at your carbohydrates overall, most of your carbs should come from vegetables, and if you're going to add some starches, do your very best to make sure that they're whole grain starches like quinoa and brown rice and whole wheat stuff, as opposed to processed flour, white flour stuff. It's generally low in nutrients, low in fiber, and those are the kinds of things that will raise your insulin levels, trigger your sugar cravings, and just sort of pack on the extra pounds without any additional nutrients.
On one of the sections in your book, it was developing your food plan. There's a little picture of a plate, and it says 40-30-30. What would be a good meal, like breakfast, let's say, that would be 40-30-30, which is 40 carbs, 30 protein, and 30 fat?
Yeah, the approximate even amounts of protein and carbohydrates and fats might be, for example, I made this morning an egg omelet. So the egg is the protein, and I put a bunch of vegetables in it. I had some broccoli and some tomatoes in it, and I mixed that in together. I sprinkled a little bit of cheese on it, and I also had some avocado and a whole wheat muffin with that. So the egg is the protein, the vegetables and muffin are the carbohydrate, and then the avocado and the cheese are the fat.
On average, how long do you think it takes a person to be able to stick to this type of diet?
Well, I don't like to use the word type of diet because that implies that it is sort of a temporary thing that you do. And what I try to get people to do is to learn how to eat better, so that's what they do most of the time. When you plan your food in advance, whether you like to do it a whole week at a time, you go shopping on Sunday and plan your food for the week, or whether you just do it the day before so you know what you're going to eat, you make sure that you know what you're going to eat tomorrow and approximately when. So you are not left at the mercy of grabbing whatever you can because you hadn't thought about it. And you're also not going to go 6 or 7 hours without food, so you don't get these overwhelming cravings and your starving brain is just grabbing whatever it can. So planning is key, and it's not that hard. It takes about 2 minutes when you practice it.
So then how long would it take for someone to do these kind of lifestyle changes for themselves? I imagine it's not going to happen overnight.
No, it doesn't happen overnight. Usually when I work with folks, it takes 5 or 6 months is a pretty good average. You know, we work on baby steps and we make some improvements every couple weeks. And it usually takes about 6 months for people to really feel like, okay, I got a handle on this 100% now.
Well, thanks so much, Dan, for coming on. I really appreciate you being here. For those that are listening, where can they find you at?
My headquarters for the sugar addiction work and the kinds of things that I do is beatingsugaraddiction.com.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.